Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Kuftet. Today's daf has been dedicated by Mr. Ronnie and Mrs. Frida Gindi and family in honor of Jack Albert Kassin and family. School of Mitzvot. Today's daf is being studied by Elun Ishmat Acham Baruch, Rafael Ben Miriam, and Avraham ben Esther. Ruach Hashem, Tanichem began Eden. Amen. We are starting on Kufhet Amud Bet, and we are going to begin three lines from the bottom. Actually, two lines from the bottom. Hu haya Omer. He used to say, now this is again Rabbi Muna, that was quoted in the last Braita. Hu haya Omer. He also used to say, Yad le'ayin tikatzetz. A hand to the eye should be cut off. Now what is this referring to? So that she tells us, Yad le'ayin shahrit. If one puts his hands, his fingers in his eyes, kodem shi'itol yadav. Before he makes netilat yadayim in the morning, so the Gemara is going to tell us that that's very detrimental. That chas v'shalom, that can even lead to blindness. And therefore the Gemara says the hand that touches the eyes before he makes netilat yadayim is worthy to be cut off, because we punished for doing such damage to the eye. Gemara continues, Yad lechotem tikatzetz. The hand that touches the nostrils, the nose, also should be cut off. The Gemara will explain the damage that is caused by going into the nostrils before netilat yadayim. Yad lepetikatzitz, the hand that goes into the mouth before netilat yadayim should also be cut off. Yad leozen tikatzitz, the hand that goes into the ears before netilat yadayim. Yad lahasuda tikatzitz. Rashi says hasuda is rivda dekosilta. Rivda dekosilta is the wound that's made after somebody does the process of bloodletting. There the Gemara is telling us that one should not touch that wound. Some of the Mefarshim explain that this is not a Netilat Yadayim rule. This is a general rule. That after one does the bloodletting, that spot seems as sensitive, and therefore you should not touch it at all. So Yad Lahasuda, the hand that touches the wound that was made for the bloodletting, Tikatzetz, should be cut off. Yad Le'ama Tikatzetz, the hand that touches the Ama, that would be the private parts of a man, should be cut off, again, before Netilat Yadayim. That's one explanation. Now she will offer a second explanation as we go further in the Gemara, and we'll see it there. Yad lefi taba'at tikatzitz, which means the back of a person, which is by the rectum area, they call the hole over there pi taba'at. Taba'at is a ring, since the hole is round like a ring. So the Gemara is saying as well that one should not place his hand there, that she explains that this is not only talking about before Netilat Yadayim, this is in general. Why? The bottom that she says, Tikatzet velo tigashuv be'ayin o be'ozen kodem netila. Because we're concerned that if one touches over there, he might touch his eyes or his ears before he makes Netilat Yadayim for going over there. So therefore, one should not touch over there. Now let's read the Rashi right before on these two lines on the bottom, Tikatzetz. When the Gemara says in all these cases that his hand should be cut off, Noah lo shetikatzetz. Right? Better off that his hand would be cut off, Sheruach ra'a shore'a layad, because the Ruach ra'a is on his hands. So again, the Gemara is trying to say the detriment that this causes. Comes Gemara and continues, Yad legigit tikatzitz. A gigit would be a barrel that, let's say, they have beer in the barrel. So the Gemara is telling you that the hand should not touch the barrel. Either, again, it's before Netilat Yadayim, and thereby rendering the beer in the barrel tameh, and now causing people to drink beer that it has a certain tumah in it. Or it's talking about a general piece of advice that in making beer, one should not handle the barrel because it ruins the process. Now the Gemara explains. Yad Misameh. The hand has the ability to blind. That's referring to placing one's hands in his eyes before it touches an eye. Yad Meharishet. The hand has the ability to deafen. That's placing it in his ears before Nitirat Shadayim. Yad Ma'aleh Fulifus. What is Fulifus? So that she tells us one of two, one Peshat, Reyah HaChotem Vapeh. That would be bad breath that emanates from the nostrils or the mouth. So placing the hand in the nostrils or the mouth before Nitirat Shadayim causes the situation called Fulifus, which is bad breath. The Gemara and Rashi actually on the fourth line, third line, velinir e. It's in the middle of that Rashi of Fulifus. He says velamidut velinir e. The yad le'ama. This that we said that one should not touch his private parts. Lav le'anyan shaharit nakatla. He says this is not a anyan of shaharit with the tefillah yadayim. Ela mishum de mevili de keri. This is a general item that one should not touch over there, and all lest he come to bad thoughts or he comes to, let's say, to a seminal discharge. So that's a general rule. Furthermore, he explains to Rashi that when it said one should not place his finger by the pitabat, that is because it can lead to hemorrhoids. So that would be an alternate explanation. Comes the Gemara and continues on the second line. Tanya, we have a bright Rabbi Natan Omer. Bat Horin Hi Zu, which means the name of the Tum'ah that rests on the hands before Netilat Yadayim is called Bat Horin. That's its name. Umakpedet, and it stays there Ad Shirchot Yadav Gimel Pa'amim, meaning it has ability to cause its damage up until the person washes his hands three times. Only then does the Bat Horin go away. Amar Rabbi Yohanan. Rabbi Yohanan said, Puch Ma'avir, according to our text, we have Bat Melech. Puch Ma'avir, the Bah, however, changes it to Bat Horin. We're talking about the Tum'ah called Bat Horin. So he says, Puch, which would be like a mascara, if a person, lady, places it, let's say, in her eyes, that already has the ability to get rid of it. As she says, if, let's say, the tum'ah damaged one's eyes, the way to ward it off, I guess it's not even a lady, for that matter. If somebody puts this puch, this eye mascara, it can heal the damage of what it did. Uposek et adema'ah. It also causes the tears to stop. It seems that somebody has abundance of tears and wants to stop. The puch has the ability to stop the tears. Umarbe se'ar be'af apayim. And it also brings a lot of hair on the eyelids. So the puch has some value to it. The Gemara says, Tanya nami'achim, we have a braita to support this. Rabbi Yosef Omer, puch, this mascara, ma'avir bat melech, and it can get rid of the tum'ah. In this case it says, bat melech, that she says, imezika li'aynav, if it caused damage to his eyes, uposek et adem'ah, and it stops the tears from coming, umarbe se'ar, be'af apayim, and it causes a lot of hair to grow by the eyelids. Ve'amar mor ugba amar shimuel. Alin is a certain type of herb, that she says that's its name. The name of the herb is Alin, and Bahem Mishum Refuah, which means these items Shmuel is teaching us, if one eats them, they do not cure any eye ailments. Which means you might think that these items are good for the eyes, they're not. He says they do not have any medicinal value. The Tosfot on the top has a little different explanation than Nashi. Because Nashi understands that he was saying, if you eat them, they have no value. Tosfot over here says, he's talking about taking the herb and placing it on one's eye. So either or, either eating it or placing it on one's eye, it does not have a medicinal value. Amar Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef taught, Kusbarta en bahem mishum refuah. Kusbarta is a type of herb, and the Gemara is telling us that also it does not have medicinal value for the eyes. Amar Rav Sheshat, who himself was blind, said, Keshut, hops, en bahem mishum refuah. Also, they do not have value, medicinal for the eyes. Amar Rav Yosef, again, who was also blind, he said, Kusbarta. Kusbarta is actually coriander. Afilu lididi kasheli. He said that even me, who is blind, when I take the coriander, it causes me pain in the eye. Not only doesn't it, you know, help my eye when I have an ailment, but on the contrary, it actually makes it worse. So that's a little strange. And the Gemara above said in the name of Shemuel that it just doesn't have healing properties. Now Rav Sheshat is even going a step further. Rav Sheshat is telling us not only doesn't have healing properties, but it actually damages the eye. He says, I'm blind, and when I have an ailment in my eye, this kusparta actually affects it to the negative. So again, Tosfot just speaks out that you would have thought, or some people make a mistake to think that there's medicinal value. That's why Shmuel had to say it has no medicinal value. Then Rav Sheshat went even further and said, and you should know, it actually causes pain. Amar Rav Sheshat. Rav Sheshat said, Gargira. Gargira is a certain type of seed, maybe from the mustard seed family. So the Gemara says, Gargira. Afilu ledidi ma'ale. He says, even for me who is blind, has benefit, which means it alleviates pain in the eye. That would be the gargira. Ve'amar mor ugba, amar Shemuel, kol mine keshut sharu. All sorts of hops are permissible, as she says, to eat on Shabbat. Again, even though the hops might have some medicinal value, but the halacha says that if you're eating it in the normal way, and since normal people eat these items, so it's not evident that you're doing it for refuah, so then it would be permissible. So he says all sorts of hops, normal people eat them, therefore even if you're eating it for medicinal purposes on Shabbat, it is okay. We didn't make the gezerah of not taking medicine. However, lebar, except mitruza, except for truza. Truza, I guess, is a type of hops that people only took for medicinal reasons, and therefore would be asur on Shabbat. Amar Rav Chisda, Rav Chisda taught, Shirika Tavya Shari. It is permissible to baste roasted meat on Shabbat. Now, how did they baste it? So that she says they had oil and eggs. They would baste the roasted meat over there when it's hot. The Hadush that she says is even after it gets dark, meaning it's Shabbat, it is permissible. Hadush, one might think that would be like mitakin, that now you're fixing the meat and you're making it edible. No, the meat is really edible even without this basting, and therefore it's permissible to baste, so long as the meat is not boiling hot. Because then you're cooking the baste that's on top of it when you place it. That's the way Rashi understands the sugya. Tosfot has a little different explanation. He learns that this has nothing to do with eating. This has to do with, again, healing. And Tosfot says from the Rach that this shrika tavya is some sort of process how they used to strain the juice of a watermelon in order to use it for healing. So they're saying that this would be permissible on Shabbat, because since the water is drinkable before one strains it, so therefore the straining would not be forbidden on Shabbat. So it's a little different explanation of what this process was. Pi'pua be'e asur. However, it is forbidden on Shabbat to whisk eggs. Why, as she says, the Rashi, I quote, the mitchazek keman de ba'el lemishdinu bekedera, because it looks like you're preparing it to put it in the pot. Neva looks like a preparation for cooking. So it's a marit ayin issue over here, that they don't want you to whisk eggs. Gemara tells a story, the bitu de ze'idi, the wife of ze'idi, avda le lechiya bar asheh, she basted some meat on Shabbat for chiya bar asheh, velo achal, and he did not eat it. He refused to eat it. Amra le, so the wife of ze'idi said, le rabach avdi le ve'achal, I do this for your rabbi, meaning my husband ze'idi, and he eats it. Ve'at lo achalt, you're better than your rabbi, you don't eat it, which means what's the problem? Obviously Chiyah bar Asheh held that this is Isur on Shabbat. He argued on his rabbi, and therefore he did not want to benefit from Isur that was done on Shabbat. Now Ze'idi obviously was lenient, that's why he would eat from it. So the Gemara says Ze'idi the Ta'meh, Ze'idi was following his reasoning. The Amar Ze'idi Noten Adam Yayin Salul Umayim Selulin Letoch Hamshameret B'Shabbat Ve'eno Choshesh. He taught that it's permissible to place clear wine, Yayin Salul, or Mayim Selulin, clear water, one may place it in the strainer on Shabbat Ve'eno Choshesh, and he does not have to be concerned. Alma, why? Kevan de mishtate ache, since it's drinkable even before you put it in the strainer. Lav mi di ka'abid, you're not doing anything. It's not because of the straining. Hachanameh, here too, by the meat. Kevan de mitchil ache, since the meat was edible before you actually put the basting on it. Lav mi di ka'abid, it's not considered mitaken the meat, because the meat was edible already. So therefore he's drawing an analogy, Ze'idi, just like you're allowed to strain clear wine or clear water, because you're not doing anything. So too be permissible to baste the meat on Shabbat. V'amar mor ugba. Mor ugba tot mi shenagfa yado. If somebody, let's say, had a wound on his hand, and the Gemara says, Nagfara, she says, Shenichshela velakta. Yeah, he got a bruise on his hand, or raglo, or his legs, his feet. Tsumta beyayin. In order to cause the swelling to go down and stop the bleeding, he's able to tsumit. Tsumit is again to stop the swelling, to shrink it. He could put wine on the hand or on the leg. That she says l'shachech adam, to stop the bleeding. Ve'enu choshesh, and he does not have to be concerned about healing on Shabbat. The Gemara is going to say ibayilu halamai. What about putting vinegar on the spot of the hand or the leg? Amar Rav Hillel l'Rav Asheh. So he says ki avina be'Rav Kana, when we're in the house of Rav Kana, amar halalo. Vinegar, no. It seems vinegar was more pungent than the wine, and therefore it does the job, and that's more, looks like refuah, and therefore refuah on Shabbat is asur. However, wine really wasn't used, let's say, to do such a thing. So therefore, one placing wine on, as we learned earlier, people just will say he might be just cleaning it with the wine, even though the wine has ability, but it's not really the preferred item. So the wine would be permissible. And the vinegar, no. Amadaba, the Hani b'nei Mechoza. But these people that live in Mechoza, that were very sensitive people, they were very fragile. Kevan de mifanke, since they're very sensitive, afilu hamra name masedehu, even wine has the ability to cure them, because their body, their flesh, let's say, is sensitive. Therefore, for them, even wine is going to be a suit for them on Shabbat in this case. Ravina ikla lebe Rav Asheh. Ravina found himself by the house of Rav Asheh. Hazia didricha le hamra. He saw that Rav Asheh was trampled on by a donkey, agabad kar'eh, on the top of his foot. Which means the donkey stepped on the foot of Rav Asheh. V'yati v'katzamit lebehala. And here he saw Rav Asher on Shabbat putting vinegar on the wound in order to stop the bleeding. Amar le, lo savar la mor le adamar, ravelel halal, oh? Don't you hold what Ravelel taught, that vinegar is forbidden? Amar le, he said, gav hayad ve gav haregel shani. He said, these places, which is the top of the hand and the top of the foot, are different. Because those places over there, that she says, is considered sakana. And that is the halakha indeed, that those areas of the body, even though they might not seem as sakana, but they are. And therefore, you can do anything on Shabbat in order to heal those parts. Again, the top of the hand and the top of the foot. That's why he allowed himself to use even vinegar. Comes the Gemara and says, Ika de amre. Others have a different version. Hazya de katsamit le behamra. He saw Rav Asher using wine to stop the bleeding and the swelling. Amar le, so he said, lo savar la mor. Doesn't my master hold lehad amar rava hale bene mehoza? These people of mehoza, kevan de mefankes, since they are sensitive, afilu hamra name masulehu, that even wine cures them. Umor name hamefanek. And my master, Rav Asher, you are sensitive, like those people of Mechoza, therefore even wine should be forbidden. Amar le, gavayad ve'gavaregel shani. And he told him, no, the top of the hand and the top of the leg is different. The amar of Adab bar Matna, amar rav, gavayad, the top of the hand, ve'gav haregel, and the top of the foot, harehen kemakah shel halal. That is considered like an internal wound. And the deen is, u'mahalelin alehem et ha-shabbat. And you're able to even mahalel Shabbat for such a wound. Clearly for internal wounds, we understand that it could be a sakana. So certainly a mahalel Shabbat. Hidush is, even though this is external, but it seems that it is sakana as well, and therefore one can mehalel Shabbat in those cases. Now the Gemara discusses, v'mebraita, tanu rabbanan, rochatzim b'me gerar. It is permissible on Shabbat to bathe in the waters of gerar, b'me hamtan, in the waters of hamtan, b'me asya, the waters of asya, or for that matter in the Tiberias hot springs. The Hiddush over here is, even though all these bodies of water are somewhat salty, the Hiddush is, and therefore it might look like you're doing it for therapeutic reasons, so the Hiddush is that since people do bathe in these items, in these rivers anyway, so therefore it does not look evidently that you're doing it for However, one may not bathe in Yama Gadol. The way we understand Yama Gadol in this sugya would be what we call the Ukiyanos. Ukiyanos, which is Oceanus, which is the bodies of water that actually surround the continents. That would include in the Atlantic Ocean, all the way to the Pacific Ocean and the Indian Ocean, all the oceans that are surrounding the continents, that would be called the Ukiyanos. In other places, Yama Gadol is explained as the Mediterranean. In any event, it says one cannot bathe in those oceans. Velo b'mem mishra. Mem mishra would be water that one soaked flax in it. Now, normally people do not bathe in those waters where you soaked flax. The only reason why one would bathe in it is for therapeutic reasons. And therefore, on Shabbat, that would be forbidden, because it is domeh lirfu'ah. Ve'lo b'yamah shel Sdom, nor can you go bathe in the Dead Sea, again, because of its salt content. It's clear that you're doing it for therapeutic reasons, and therefore it's forbidden. Now the Gemara has a question, Urminu, we have a contradiction. That's fine. You can bathe in the Tiberias hot springs, Ubiyama Gadol, Clearly it says here you're allowed to bathe in the Oceanus, in the Ukeanos. But you cannot bathe in the water that the flax was soaked in. Nor are you able to bathe in the Dead Sea. Kashya Yamagadol, Yamagadol. We have a contradiction from Yamagadol to Yamagadol. The first Braita said you can't bathe in Yamagadol. The second Braita said you can. So how do we reconcile this? So before we reconcile, we have to give an introduction to what we're going to see now. There are different bodies of water that can bring tahara to a person if he dips in it. The most common form is a mikveh. Now, a mikveh would be a body of water that is collected in one spot, let's say at least 40 se'ah, the measurement. But there's certain dinim that are applicable to a mikveh. The waters have to be still waters, meaning they cannot be moving or flowing. And furthermore, not every type of tum'ah can be purified in a mikveh. In some situations, the Torah demands a ma'yan. A ma'yan would be like a spring that would be moving water, natural spring. And also, for that matter, there's certain laws legabeh using water, for example, for the mehatat, the water that they would use to sprinkle on people that became tameh. Those waters can only be gotten from a ma'yan. Therefore, mikveh waters would be pasul. So now the question of the Gemara is, how do you classify different bodies of water? What classifies them as a mikveh or a ma'yan? So therefore the Gemara is going to have over here actually a three-way mahlokin amongst the Tanaim, how to classify bodies of water. And once we learn this three-way mahlokin, we will try to use the rationale here to answer the two braitot by Yamagadol. So the Gemara says like this. Amar b'yuhana kashar habi meir harabi Yehuda. Gemara answers. We can answer the braitot that what it said. You're allowed to bathe in Yamagadol, that's Rabbi Meir. And the opinion that said you can't bathe in the Yamagadol, that would be Rabbi Yehuda. What are those opinions? We'll see now. Ditnan, we have a Mishnah. Kol hayamim kemikveh. The first opinion, which is actually Rabbi Meir, he says, all the bodies of water, all the yamim, all the seas of the world have a status of a mikveh. Shnei Emar, he quotes a pasuk right in the beginning of Bereshit, ul mikveh hamayim kara yamim. The pasuk says that God called the bodies of water that collected mikveh hamayim, he called them yamim. So you see what? That all the yamim, all the seas and the oceans are called mikveh. So therefore he gives them a status of Mikveh Devreh Rabbi Meir. Now, let's read the Rashi together. Kol hayamim kemikveh. Rashi says, Lechol Torat Mikveh. Meaning it has all the full-fledged laws of Mikveh. Ve'en lehem Torat Ma'yan. And they will not have a din of a Ma'yan, a spring. Uma ben Mikveh le'Ma'yan. What is the difference between a Mikveh and a Ma'yan? Ha'Ma'yan kasheh le'tvilat zav. No, so now we get into details. A zav can only dip in a ma'yan, in a spring. Zav is somebody that had an emission out of his body that was tameh. Vaza'at sipor mitzora. For that matter, when a leper needs to be sprinkled with the waters, can only come from a ma'yan. Because the pasuk says by the mitzora, ma'im hayim. Whenever it says Mayim Hayim, it means from a spring. Ul Kadesh Mehatat, or to use for the waters that are sprinkled with the Paraduma, the Bechulu Mayim Hayim Ketiv. Because in all these cases, by the Zav, by the Mitzorah, by the Mehatat, Torah uses Mayim Hayim, and she gives you the Pesukim. Bezav Ketiv, and Ahaz Pesuro, be Mayim Hayim. Be Mesurah Ketiv, El Keli Hayres, al Mayim Hayim. Be Mehatat Ketiv, Mayim Hayim, El Keli. And those that will dip in the Ma'yan, it'll purify them, kishen zohalin, even when they are moving, because that's the derech of a mayan. A spring is always moving. Because that is the normal way of a mayan. But a mikveh on the other side, shehen mayim mechunasim. That's only considered gathered waters into one place. Let's say one dipped in a mikveh, in the waters, let's say. But in a place where they're moving, for example, the waters are on an incline, and therefore the waters are sloping down, so the waters are actually moving, so in a mikveh that would be pasul. Because then again, a mikveh, you have to only dip in the places where the water is still. Only when it's in a place of where it's collected, right? Ashbor is in a collected place. Okay? So that is the difference. So the Bimi'ir's opinion is all the bodies of water, all the waters in the world are considered mikveh based on the pasuk in Bereshit. Now we go to the next shita. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, three lines from the bottom in the Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda says, Yam HaGadol kemikveh. Now, only the Yam HaGadol has a din of mikveh, which would be the Oceanus, those oceans, has a deed of mikveh. Velo ne'emar yamim. So then why does it say, ul mikveh amayim kara yamim? Yamim is mashma, that many of the, all the oceans in the world. And why does it say it in plural? It should say, ul mikveh amayim kara yam. If you only talk about the body of water called ukianos. So he says, ela shiyesh bo mine yamim harbe. Because the ukianos has in it waters from all over the world, which means many seas let out their waters into the ukianos. So therefore it calls the Yam HaGadol Yamim, because it's actually a product of many waters. And the Gemara in a different place proves that. The Gemara proves it by saying that if you eat fish from different parts of the world that are surrounded by the ukianos, the fish tastes differently. Mm-hmm. Why is that so? Because obviously, since the waters in that spot are different, because let's say the different seas let out into that spot, so it gives the fish a different taste. So you see clearly that it's not one body of water. So otherwise all the fish would taste the same. It's interesting to point out, it seems that the taste of the fish also has to do with the water that it's in. In any event, let's read Rashi together. Four lines from the bottom. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Lo kara katuv mikveh el yam hagadol. Right? The Torah said, ul mikveh amayim kara yamim, it's only talking about yam hagadol. The be mishtai krav maaseh bereshit. Shesham nikvu kol meh bereshit. Fine. Velo ne'emar yamim b'lshon rabim. Why did it say that yamim? Elav teshemu rabim bo mine yamim harbe. Because all the waters of the sea fall into the yam hagadol. That she says, shekol hanehalim olchim el hayam. So therefore we see Rabbi Yehuda obviously makes a difference between Yam HaGadol and other Yamim. These other Yamim are considered Ma'ayan. However, according to Yehuda, the only one that's considered a Mikveh would be considered Yam HaGadol. Let's see the third opinion. The third opinion is the Biyoseh. Two lines on the bottom of the Gemara. The Biyoseh Omer, Biyoseh Tot. Kol hayamim mitaharin bezohalin. He said, all the rivers of the world, they will mitahir even when they're moving. Which means he gives them a din of mayan. Uposlin upesulin lezavim ulmitzoraim ulkadesh bahem mehatat. However, at the same time he says, they're not going to have a din of Ma'ayan, legabe the three laws of Azav and Metzora and Mechatat. So he puts the rivers in a middle state, which means they're kasher if they're moving, meaning it seems he considers them mikveh. His chidush is, but since the normal way of these waters is to move, the seas, the oceans, there's movement, so it's a type of mikveh that the derech is to move, such a mikveh would be permissible to dip in, even in the places where they're moving. That's the style of this mikveh. It's a moving mikveh. However, It's not a Mayan, and therefore it won't be good for a Mitzorah, and a Zav, and a Me'atah. Let's read that in Ashi, two lines on the bottom. Yoseh Omer, Kol HaYamim, Ve'yam HaGadol, which means, Ve'yam HaGadol, Torat Ma'ayan, Ma'im Zohalin Alein, Ne'ayan Shem Metarim B'Zohalin, which means, we'll give the Yam HaGadol even, a deen of Ma'ayan, in the sense that, even in the areas that the water is flowing, it'll be admissible to dip in there. There should derech liyot nechalim zohalim alayim, because that's the derech of these waters. Vezeh darkan, aval pesulin in the turat mayim chayim. But you cannot use it for mayim chayim, meaning for mitzurah, for zav, for tfahatat, that ketuv kera mikveh, because bottom line, the Torah does call it a mikveh. So let's review now the shitot that we have over here, now apply it to our case. The Mimi is very clear. He says all the waters in the world, which means there's no difference in Ukiyanos or any other water in the world, all of them have a status of mikveh. Now, let's understand that opinion. Because the Gemara wanted to say, it's that opinion of the Bimi'ir that says, Rochatzim b'yam ha-gadol, that it would be permissible to dip in the yam ha-gadol. Where do we see that from this opinion? Why should it be permissible? So explanation is like this. There is a certain Mishnah that says that one of the things that are posel ma'ayan, one of the things that make a ma'ayan pasul, is if they're very salty. Which is very salty waters are pasul for ma'ayan. You have to know that fact. Now, from the fact that we saw the Bihuda, for example, the Bihuda was the one that said that the Yama Gadol, the Ukiyanos, is considered a mikveh. Everything else is considered a Mayan, but Ukiyanos is considered a mikveh, and Rabbi Yehuda learned that from the Pasuk, Ul mikveh hamayim kara yamim, that was referred to Yama Gadol. Why does it say yamim? Because all the waters pour into it. Now, why would it be considered a mikveh and not a Mayan? Obviously because Rabbi Yehuda holds that the Ukiyanos is very salty. And since it's very salty, it does not qualify as a Mayan. And therefore, since it's very salty, Rabbi Yehuda will be of the opinion that says what? You can't bathe in the Yam HaGadol on Shabbat. Why? Because since it's very salty, as we see his Shita that says it's not a Mayan, so therefore it's obviously therapeutic because of all the salt, therefore be forbidden to go in on Shabbat. Where Hachamim, they don't make a difference between Yam HaGadol and other waters. For them, obviously, it's not the issue of salty or not, because they say all the waters are considered a mikveh, which is not only the Yam HaGadol, but all the waters. So obviously, for them, the salt isn't a factor, so that'll be the opinion that says you can bathe in the Yam HaGadol on Shabbat, because like every other ocean in the world. So that's the way the Gemara wants to answer at this point, that the contradiction in the Braitot between can you bathe in Yam HaGadol or not, the Braita that says you can is the Bimi'ir l'shitato, and the Braita that says you can't is Rabbi Yehuda. Again, Rabbi Yehuda will say that it's considered excessively salty, that's why we don't consider it a Mayan, and that's why you can't go into it on Shabbat, because it's therapeutic, whereas the Bimi'ir says no, I don't. This is not considered, let's say, more salt than anything else. The Elawah, we have a pasuk that says u'mikveh ha'mayim karayamim, it's considered a mikveh, all the bodies of water, and therefore there's no difference between this and any other water, therefore you can bathe in the ukiyanos. Comes again when I says, Matkif la'rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, and the Mamba Yitzchak brought a question. Imur de pari le'anyan tum'ah v'tahara. Again, how could you bring this mahloket for our subject of Shabbat? They're arguing in the laws of tum'ah v'tahara, which means the mahloket is based on a pasuk. Is it a mikveh? Is it a ma'yan? Le'inyan Shabbat, mi shamatu? But who told you that they're arguing le'inyan Shabbat? Shabbat, the issue is refuah. Therefore, could be when it comes to Shabbat, maybe all will all agree that it's permissible to go into the waters on Shabbat. Which means, who told you to apply the machloket of tum'ah legabe Shabbat? So Gemara rejects that answer. So now we're back to the question, how do you reconcile the contradiction of the two braitot? Ela amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak la kasha, had de ishtahe, had de lo ishtahe. Very easy. We'll say it depends if you're staying in the waters or not staying in the waters. Meaning, if you're going to stay in the waters, ishtaheh. So then already it's clear that you're doing it for medicinal purposes because you want to get the benefits of the waters. So if you stay in the water for a prolonged time, it doesn't tell us what's considered a prolonged time, but it says ishtaheh. That would be asur. And the bride that it said it's permissible, so where you go in, you come right out. Hadnilo ishtaheh. Because then it's clear you're doing it for bathing purposes. That's the Gemara's answer. Gemara's Bemayo Kimta. Le Batraita. How did you establish? You established the second Braita. De lo ishtaheh. Which means, obviously you tell me the Braita that said it's permissible to bathe in the Yam HaGadol is talking about what? Lo ishtaheh, where you did not spend extra time in the water, you just came out quickly. If that's the way you're explaining that Braita, then it should be permissible for that matter to bathe in the waters of the soaked flax. Again, since you're not staying in the waters, so therefore even those waters should be permissible. You're going right in and coming right out. And actually we have a braita that confirms that. It says, not only can you dip in the Tiberias hot springs, and you can also dip in the waters of the flax, and the Dead Sea. And even though, let's say, you have scabs on your head, and therefore you're doing it, let's say, for, it might look like you're doing it for medicinal purposes, but so long as you don't stay in the waters for a long time, so now we have a question. Because if you're telling me that the Braita that was Matir Yam HaGadol is talking about Lo Nishtaheh, where you didn't stay in for a long time, then that Braita should have allowed also Mem Mishra. And that Braita clearly said Mem Mishra, the water where the flags are soaked, is Asur. Why should it be Asur if you're not staying in for a long time? Even that should be Mutar. Ela, the Gemara has a different answer. Yam HaGadol, Yam HaGadol, HaKashan is the final answer. You know what the answer to the contradiction is? Ha biyafin shebo, ha bira'in shebo. It depends what part of the Yam HaGadol you're bathing in. If you're in the yafin shebo, which we'll say, let's say, are the cleaner parts, the better waters. So those places usually are used for bathing. So that would be permissible. Bira'im, it seems there were different areas that were called ra'im. Whatever made them ra'im, maybe they were extra salty, and therefore those areas are going to be forbidden. That she says, for both cases are talking about bidishtaheh. Even if you stayed in for a long time. Only if you stayed in for a long time. Meaning, if you go into the clean areas, doesn't matter, you can stay in as long as you want. That's bathing. The hidush is, even if you go into the bad areas where normally people go for the fu'ah, it'll only be asur bidishtaheh. And that's what the second writer was talking about. Ishtaheh, and that's why it said mem mishra is going to be forbidden, because we're talking about where you're staying in for a prolonged time. So the writer works out very good. The second writer would be saying, Yam HaGadol Mutar. What is it talking about, Yam HaGadol Mutar? In the clean areas, right, where you're spending, let's say, a long time, right, that would be permissible. And the Braita that said it is forbidden, that's talking about the bad areas, the Maim Ra'im, where you're staying for a prolonged time. That would be forbidden. So the Gemara says, Mem Mishra Namel HaKasha. Now we don't have a question either by the flax, because we have one Braita that says the flax is permissible, the water of the flax, and we have another Braita that says, or two Braita that actually say, that flax water is Asur. We can answer very simply that when is the flax water asur? Only when you are staying in there for a prolonged amount of time. When you're not staying in for a prolonged amount of time. Comes the new Mishnah and says, En ochlin izbiyon b'Shabbat. One is not allowed to eat izbiyon. The Gemara will explain what izbiyon is. Nefisha eno ma'achal b'ri'im. Because healthy people don't eat izbiyon, and therefore it's evident that you're doing it for medicinal purposes. Aval ochelu et yu'ezir. He's able to eat this herb called yu'ezir, since healthy people eat it also, it's not evident. Veshote abubru'ah. And he could also drink this drink called abubru'ah. Why? Because again, regular people, healthy people would drink this as well. Kol ha'ochlim ochel adam lirfu'ah, which means, even if, let's say, the person is sick, but any food he's allowed to eat, because since it's a normal food, so it's not evident that he's doing it for the fu'ah purpose, even though his kavanah is for the fu'ah. But since it's a regular food that everybody else eats, he can eat it. V'chol ha'mashkin shoteh. And for that matter, he can drink any beverages. Chutz mimime dekalim. Except for this drink called me dekalim, which the Gemara will explain what it is. V'kos ekrin. The sheet tells us kos ekrin is a cup of juice that's made up of the roots of different vegetables and different types of besamin. Why? Mepnei she'en liroka. Because these items specifically are used for people that have jaundice, and therefore yiroka, which would be like a green. That's green literally. It's a jaundice. In any event, so one cannot drink that because people will think he's doing it for the medicinal purpose. Aval shoteu medekalim litzma'o. However, but he's allowed to drink medekalim for his to quench his thirst. That she says im enochole. Now, if he's not sick, then already he can drink this to quench his thirst. Because obviously people will not be concerned that he's doing it for sick purposes. It sounds like from Nashi, however, that even the guy who has jaundice, who wants to drink this item not for medicinal reasons, he wants to drink because he's thirsty, would be asur. Because bottom line, since he is sick, so therefore the impression is that he's doing it for the fu'ah regardless. V'sach shemen akrin. And he's also allowed to, let's say, anoint himself with this oil of ekrin that was made from the roots of the vegetables. Shelon irfua, as long as he's not doing it for medicinal purposes. Amar Rav Yosef, now Rav Yosef is going to explain some terminologies. Ezov, when the Torah talks about ezov, which is the Torah tells us, agudat ezov, that sometimes you have to take a bundle of ezov, and you have to dip it in the waters, and you use it to sprinkle, let's say, on tahor people. What is this ezov? So the Gemara says, it's abarta bar hamag. That's the name of it. Abarta bar hamag. Izbion, which is the item that our Mishnah discussed, that one cannot eat it on Shabbat, if he's sick, because it's considered for medicinal, that's called abarta, that's a hyssop. Bar hinag. Okay, so you have the abarta bar hamag and the abarta bar hinag. Comes the Gemara and says, now she just tells us where they get those names from. Some say what is called bar hamag because it grows in a place where there's gemi. Gemi are different types of plants. Bar hinag shegadal ben ahigim. It grows next to the thorns. That's why they named it those names. Ula amar. Ula said, Marva Hevra. He calls the Ezov of the Torah Marva Hevra. Marva is sage. That's the herb called sage. So white sage is the Ezov that the Torah mentions. Ula ekla lebe Rav Shemuel Bar Yehuda. One time Ula found himself by the house of Rav Shemuel Bar Yehuda. Aitu lekamem Marva Hevra. So they brought for him white sage. Amar, so he said, Rav Shmuel said, Hainu ezov dechti beoraitas. Oh, that's the ezov that the Torah talks about. Rav Pepe Amar, Rav Pepe has a third explanation what the ezov is. He says, Shumshuk. Amar Rav Yirmiyah medifti kevate de Rav Pepe mistabra. It makes sense like Rav Pepe ditnan, because we have a Mishnah. Mitzvat ezov shelosha kilahim, which means we know the ezov to fulfill the mitzvah the right way, you have to take at least three of them, because the Torah says ukachtem agudat ezov. Agudat is a bundle. So what's a bundle of them? Three stems you have to take at least. Ubaem shelosha giv'olim, and on each one of the stems there are three giv'olim. There are three. They would call that capsules, let's say, on the stem of these of the ezov, where they have in them the as she says kanim dakim, it's like very thin capsules that come out of them. The shumshuk, and the shumshuk that he was talking about, who the mishtakahache, okay, it has the three givolim on the stems.
So comes Gemara and says, so that's the Ezov of the Torah, Shumshuk. Gemara says, Lemai achlile, why would the people eat these items? Which means the Mishnah says, En ochlim isbiyon. Right? Because isbiyon is eaten by sick people. So why would a sick person eat this herb called isbiyon? So Gemara says, the kukiyani. Kukiyani is the tolaim shivnemi'ayim. Worms that are in the intestines. Bemai achlele. Now how do you eat it? Besheva tamre. Uchmeta. You eat it with seven black dates. Okay? So the Gemara then asks, Mimai havya. Where do you get intestinal worms from? How does it come to you? Bekimcha desare. When one eats flour, barley flour, the halif ale arba'in yomin, that was eaten 40 days after it was ground into flour, so it seems that causes intestinal worms. Gemara says, aval ochel hu et yu'ezer. A person on Shabbat is allowed to eat the yu'ezer. My yu'ezer. What is this yu'ezer? So the Gemara says, putnak. What is putnak? Now she explains it as penny royal. Lemai achlila. What would one eat this yu'ezer for? Le arketa. Arketa, as she says, is for worms that are found in the kaved. Kaved would be the liver. Bemai achlila. How do you eat it? Which means, what's the recipe? Beshev al tamre hagvarta. That you have to eat it with seven white dates. Now the Gemara asks, Mimai havya. How do you get worms in the liver? Where does the disease come from? Me'umsa, from eating umsa. Umsa means meat that's not fully cooked. They put it on the coals a little, but it's really raw meat. Umaya, and drinking water, alibar lekana, on an empty stomach. Again, eating umsa and water on an empty stomach. Umibisna shamna, or eating fatty meats, alibare kana, on an empty stomach, or mebesrad de Torah, or eating meat of an ox, alibare kana, on an empty stomach, meamguza, alibare kana, amguza would be eating an egoz, let's say a walnut, on an empty stomach, umegire derubia, alibare kana, that's eating the stems of fenugreek, on an empty stomach, Ummashte maya abatrayu. And after all these things, you drink water. See, after you have the umsa and all the other things that we mentioned, on an empty stomach and then drink water after it, that causes worms in the kaved. The ilo, now let's say you don't have yu'ezer, you don't have this healing to get rid of the worms, so what should you do? So the Gemara says, libla tahle hivarta. Let him swallow white cress. V'ilan, if he doesn't have that either, liti betanita, let him fast. V'liti bisra shamna, then let him take fatty meat. V'lijde agumre, and place it on the coals. V'limitz garma, let him suck out the juice from one of the bones of that meat. V'ligma hala, and then let him swallow hala, which would be some vinegar. The ikadamre, and some say hala lo. No, don't swallow the vinegar. Mishum tekashe lekabda, because that's bad for the liver. The ilan, if you don't, can't do that either. Laite gurda de asinta. Take the bark of a bush. Asinta is like a sene. Gurda would be like, say, peel the bark of a bush. Now the Gemara warns you that when you peel the bark, peel it in a downward motion, from up to down. But don't peel it up. Don't peel it from down to up. Why? Dilma nafka aide pume. Because maybe the worms will come out of your mouth if you do it that way. Meaning, depending on how you, the direction that you peel the snare, that's the direction they're going to come out. So you want them to come out of the down, right? the rectum of the body. So you peel it down. But if you peel it up, the worms will come up and crawl out of his mouth. Now take the bark and cook it b'shichra be cook the bark of the tree in beer at twilight. Be shibbe is at twilight. Ulmahar naskidinun linikbin dide. The next day, let him hold his nose because of the smell. Vilishte, and let him drink it. Vechim mafne, and when he goes to the bathroom, because then it'll be released. Mafne afishad dikla. Let him go back to that place where he stripped the bark, and let him relieve himself on that spot, and that'll get rid of them. Others explain that when it says hold his nose, means when he's drinking, he should close all the holes on his face in order to keep the potency of the drink in his body so it doesn't escape. Vishotin abubra'a. It's permissible to drink on Shabbat this abubra'a. Mai abubru'a. So the Gemara says, Hum terya. So the Gemara says, Mai hum terya. So the Gemara says, Hutra yehida'a. She says is a certain type of tree that grows without leaves, and it seems they make a drink out of it. So the Gemara says, what do you drink this item for? Somebody drinks water that was left out overnight, so there's a concern that there might be the venom of a snake in there. So this Abu Bru'a heals the venom of a snake. If he doesn't have that, Liti hamsha kilile. Let him bring five roses. Vahamisha kustad shikhra. And five glasses of beer. Vinishlokinu ba'de'adadi. Let him cook them together. Ade kaima anpeka. Until he gets a shi'ur of anpeka, which Rashi says is revi'it. So until you have a revi'it of beer with this rose mixture in it, then already vinishteh. And then drink it, and that'll get rid of the snake venom. Ime de Rav Ahdabavi, the mother of Rav Ahdabavi Bar Ami, Avda le lahu gabra, she made this potion for a certain fellow, Had Kilila, she took, in this case, one rose, the Had Kustad de Shikhra, and one course of beer, Shalka, and she cooked it together, the Ishkite, and she drank it, and she gave it to him to drink. And then, the shagra tanura, she then lit the oven that was in the house, the garaftan, and she took out most of the coals, so it was still a little warm, the oven, the otvite levinta begave, and she took a brick, and she placed it in the oven itself so that fellow can sit. And he sat in that warm oven on the brick, and the poison came out of him, the Gemara says, like a leaf of a green palm tree. And it came out of his system. Comes the Gemara and says, actually, according to Rashi, it says hikiha edis. Hikiha sounds like he actually vomited out. Rav Avya Amar, Rav Avya said, Ribi'ata de halba me'izya hivarta. So Rav Avya comes along and says that if a person takes a rivi'it of goat's milk, white goat's milk, that can also cure the poisonous snake, the poison of the snake. Ravuna bar Yuda Amar, Laiti etroga halita. He says, take a sweet etrog, velehaike, which means dig it out, which means carve out the etrog, velimneye dubsha, and fill it with honey, velutbe be milele denura, and place it on the coals of the fire, velichliye, and eat it. Rav Harina Amar, Meraglayim bene arba'im yom. If you have urine that's 40 days old, or urine of a 40-day-old child, has medicinal benefits to it. The Gemara says, Barzina, which would mean if you take a small measure of it, which is actually 1/32 of a log, What is that good for? Lizibura. Somebody got bitten by a wasp. Rebi'a'a. Now the way that she explains Rebi'a'a, he says that would be Rebi'it log, which is if a person takes a quarter of a log of Beraglayim, Le'akraba. That would be good if you got bitten by a scorpion. Palgarivra, half a log that she says is palgarivra legiluya. That would be good for giluya. If somebody drank water that was revealed because there's snake poison in it, rivra, and that would be actually a full log, right? Rivra in this case is a full log which has four kabin. Afidu keshavim malu. It'll even cure the person if he got a spell of black magic on him. Amar of Yohanan. Anigron, that would be bee juice. The abangar, that's a certain herb that he makes into like a juice, a soup. The tariyaka, that's balsam. Ma'alu, ben de giluya, ben de keshafim. That's beneficial whether he drinks the water that was uncovered or for witchcraft. Hayman de bala, hevya, a person that swallowed a snake. What should he do? Luchle, keshuta bimilcha. Let him eat keshuta bimilcha, salted hops. Vilirhatet latamile. And then let him run 3 meal. The Gemara tells a story. Rav Shimi bar Ashe hazya lahu gavra de bala havya. He saw a fellow that swallowed a snake. Idmele kefarsha. So he wanted to cure him. So he appeared to him as if he was a horseman that wanted to chase him. He forced him to eat these hops with salt on it. Then he chased them. So he caused them to run after. And the snake came out of him in pieces. Some say, different version. Nafshimi Barashe Bala Havya. She's Nafshimi Barashe himself swallowed a snake. Ata Eliyahu. Liyawa Nevi appeared to him. Idmele kefarsha. He appeared to him as a horseman. Uchle keshuta b'melcha. He forced him to eat the hops with the salt. That hate kamet latam ilen. He chased him 3 meal. Then afak mine gube gube. And it came out in pieces. Baruch Adonai. Amen.